Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
You're not alone, Spike.
Who's that? Come out where I can see you.
Spike.
Ooh. Oh. That's supposed to scare me. You have any idea who you're dealing with?
I mean, yeah, of course. And no, I wasn't trying to scare you. I'm just, you know, I'm goofing around, right? It gets boring just hanging around this place. I mean, I could have been cursed to haunt a house, maybe. One with regular foot traffic, or any foot traffic. I mean, haunting a cemetery, it just feels so, I don't know, redundant.
Hello and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we used to be watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one by one spoiler free, but now we are listening to and discussing every episode of Slayers, a Buffyverse story, also one by one, also spoiler free. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo. I would say that this is podcastception, right? Like that's what's happening here. Podcast inside of a podcast, podcasting about a podcast. This week we are here to talk to you. Finally, thank you for your patience. We hit a couple of bumps in the road on our way to episode 5. We are talking about episode 5 of Slayers, a Buffyverse story.
Episode 5 was written and directed by Amber Benson and Christopher Golden, and co-directed and produced by Casey Wayland. It originally aired in a full season binge drop on October 12th, 2023.
And this is the one, according to Kristen Russo, where Jonathan is a ghost in the alternate universe of Sunnydale, and Anyanka is stuck in the body of Jasper. We love to see it. It is also the one where, notably, I think, we get some big Cordelia backstory from the alternate universe. Jenny? Almost called you Jennifer right at the top just because I felt like I was getting serious. Big thoughts on episode 5 of Slayers.
My biggest thought is that we were going to tape this episode so long ago. And I took my notes so long ago that if I ever... It's really hard these days for me to hold on to any big thoughts, even for a moment. And with the time that has elapsed, my big thoughts have evaporated into the ether. But I am excited to be back.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back too. Yeah, I mean, so I have sort of a dovetailed experience, but not quite the same experience, where I there was such a huge gap for me between episodes 4 and 5. Not in my original listen, of course, because I listened to them all before they released. But this listen, I was like, okay, what's happening now? But I think that some things in this episode are executed in ways that I am delighted by. I think, you know, Jonathan and Jonathan's, like Danny Strong's performance, I think, is something that I celebrate. I was really, really happy about that. And then I also, I'm just Emma Caulfield, be my best friend, because I just think that her performance is so good and she's doing so much. I'll have a lot to say about the Cordelia backstory when we get there. I will say, like, I'm still, as a listener, I'm still struggling with the massive amount of new lore that's being told to me. And, you know, that, like, with the Kurgan stuff that we're learning and the spell, the sunlight spell, I really don't know. When I read it on the page, I can retain it. But as a listener, I struggle with the amount of information that I'm hearing inside of each episode. So that still was present for me in this one.
I do feel like it might be easier to ingest and retain if there wasn't, like, it feels like there's just a ton of new stuff flying around.
Yeah.
We've got the whole, you know, a vengeance demon actually possess, you know, like that whole deal, and this queen of vampires and the queen of black magic and all of the Kurgan stuff, which is like not just one thing.
Yes.
It's like kind of, you know, and a lot of the Kurgan stuff I think is very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the story might possibly be better served if we were just like focusing on that, if we were just building that without like kind of adding on all of these other additional sort of like trappings that don't necessarily feel essential to the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it feels like maybe there are some things that could be pared away that like would make it easier to experience, mm-hmm. you know, like the core of what they're getting at. Also, like we've got ghouls.
Ghouls.
In the cemetery.
Yep.
We've never had a ghoul before. We've never had a demon or human trapped inside the body of an animal, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we've had that for sure. And also, I mean, maybe this is some... The whole concept of vampires also, like you talked about the concept of the vengeance demon being an outside presence that comes in, but I don't know that we've ever really discussed vampires as existing ephemerally and then entering the body of the person who has been sired by another vampire. Like, that also is a pretty massive thing.
Within the realm of the show, you know, I feel like vampires have been talked about as human demon hybrids,
right?
And
so
I guess through a certain lens, like a demon possessing a human body or whatever, and like Angel from day one kind of like supports that idea,
right.
Like he get yourself a man who can do both. He's doing both as hard as he can.
Well, Slayers is not responsible for this, but I think that like some of the muddiness of it comes with the soul, right? Because it's like either a vampire is like the person without the soul, or a vampire is a person with this ephemeral demon inside of it. We're doing kind of both, and that's not the Slayers doing. It's just like, I think that's
right,
why,
right, right.
Which, like, and not that it has to be one or the other, but I think it's just a little bit muddy when we get into that realm. But all that to say, there is a lot, and I think to your point, Jenny, and maybe this wasn't your point, but what you just said made me think about the fact that what's happening in the Drusilla Terra storyline and the Kurgan and the Sunlight spell and all of that, I think feels so different narratively from what is happening, especially like in this episode, right? When we are going to the magic box and Anya's landed there, when we're going to the zoo and it's Giles and Clem, when we're going to the cemetery and it's Ghost Jonathan and Spike, that feels like a particular kind of story and a particular kind of listen. But when we go to Drusilla and Tara and we're doing the Kurgan stuff, it feels very different to me. And so I don't know that this is what you were even saying, but I do wonder if the way that the story was being told was consistent, that like maybe my ears would pick it up better. But when I go from like thinking about were hyenas in the zoo to like thinking about the physical needs of a spell and the metaphysical needs of a spell in detail, it's hard for me personally to like follow it as much as I would like to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think tonally it's like, it's kind of, okay, so I'm thinking like about the television series really threading the needle between sort of like the dark dramatics and rich emotionalism and then like the really funny stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like with a few exceptions, Buffy like always kind of keeps its scope. Like there's a very consistent feeling North Star throughout any given set of circumstances or like any new monster or whatever, like mm-hmm. it all feels kind of like one thing. But here we have like the spectrum feels wide, and the spectrum feels like, it feels like the elements of this series so far are like landing kind of on either side of the center lane
yeah.
that I think Buffy often found itself on.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it feels like maybe just like, I feel like I don't need quite so many ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe the ingredients are like getting in the way of like
yeah.
the core of the thing.
Yeah.
The meat.
Yeah.
But you have told me numerous times.
Yeah. That
there are things ahead.
There are things ahead. And I, you know, and I think I'm repeating myself from other pods at this point discussing this series. But, you know, I have a lot more room for first episodes, first seasons of things than I
oh, yeah.
have ever had, because I now like have more understanding of the way things are made and telling story and how things can be very tricky. And so I, you know, I have a lot of room for the lift that's being done here. But yeah, I can only tell you that past Kristen was struggling with the things that current Kristen is struggling with. And then past Kristen got to like episodes, I really think it was like 7, 8, 9, where I was like, what? Like, you know, it really cranked up for me. So we'll see. We'll see if current Kristen feels the same way past Kristen did. We'll get to talk about it here. But in the meantime, why don't we dig in to this episode?
Okay. Is there like a really significant reason for Jonathan to be here? Maybe not.
Because Danny but, Strong said yes.
Yeah. I mean,
we don't know that. I don't know that. I'm just opining, but like, you know.
I mean, adding another element, you know, adding another alternate reality version of a character we already know who is a ghost haunting a cemetery that's full of ghouls that are now going to eat the flesh of the dead right off the bone of Spike, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is like more stuff. And could we get where we're going? You know, could we get what we're going to get from Jonathan some other way without adding additional elements? Yeah. But if Danny Strong says yes, if we're getting the band back together, you know, like we're getting the band back together
yeah.
and it's fun and it's great to hear Danny Strong going, "Ooh."
Danny Strong loves nothing more than getting to be a ghost. Let's just be really clear. There, we yeah. have the scripts, and I knew before I even had the scripts that there were some lines here from Ghost Jonathan in this episode that were definitely not scripted, but that is confirmed by me having the script in my hand that he is just ghosting the fuck out. I love
ghosting
it.
I
do think that there are some times when things are added and like what have you. I also know that like I am a fan, and so like there are elements that perhaps are done for me to simply enjoy it, and therefore I simply am enjoying it. But Ghost Jonathan is working for me partially because I love Danny Strong so much, and I think it's really fun to have his energy in the universe. Jonathan is a very particular Buffy character that, like Clem, honestly, like not that they're not Clem and Jonathan are alike, but that like there isn't really another Clem. There isn't really another Jonathan. Like they're so unique in what they bring to the Buffyverse. And so I'm delighted to have him here. I was really interested, and I know we're like, you know, sort of doing a scene by scene here, but since we're on Jonathan, I would love your thoughts on alternate universe Jonathan, because we kind of learned that in this universe Jonathan was not part of a trio. He was simply evil on his own, which is so wild to me because I don't know how we get there in what we know about our Jonathan, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully there's just no Warren in this reality, which would make it a better world, of course. Mm-hmm. But where's Andrew?
And also just like, I mean, I guess the like moment I had with it, and we don't have to like dissect this too much, but was that to me, Jonathan and Andrew were the products of folks who, when they stand too close to really bad shit, are very malleable and just kind of go that way, go that way, right? Like when we saw the trio, Warren was the most necessary ingredient of that trio for it to be as evil as it was. Mostly Andrew just wanted to make out with Warren, and Jonathan was like really excited to be palling around with a bunch of nerds and getting to use his nerddom. And he, of course, likes the idea of power. I was just like, well, how did Jonathan turn evil here without a Warren, you know? Who is Jonathan without Warren? Who does he become? Anyway, this Jonathan has a huge vendetta against Cordelia, but also, you know, thinks Cordelia is very attractive. So same. I feel you, Jonathan. But we learn that Anya trapped Jonathan in the cemetery. And we also learned, to your point earlier, Jenny, that there are ghouls.
Yes.
I don't understand why Drusilla would be fucking around with ghouls. Why does she care? Why does she care if the ghouls eat the bodies of the victims of the vampires? Why does this? It just feels like Drusilla maybe needs to take a step back. Okay.
Seems kind of speciesist.
Yeah.
You know,
like you're not going to use them. You killed them. You're just going to leave their bodies there. Why can't the ghouls have some too?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, you know, Slurper's remorse. You decide 6 hours later you want to go back and turn the victim.
Oh my God. Jenny. Honestly, the reason why it's important that we podcast is so that Jenny can invent something called Slurper's remorse.
Who amongst us has not experienced Slurper's remorse? God,
unbelievable.
Something that I do like about the cemetery is the jaunty harpsichord music.
Yeah, me too.
I like it a lot.
Listen, Jonathan, fucking bisexual representation. You know what I mean? Just out here absolutely drooling all over Spike, punching ghouls. It's great. It's good. He says all manly blonde swagger about Spike, and later says that watching this is sexy. Literally uses the word sexy. Why do I feel like this is Danny Strong adding to the script? You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, it's in the script, but why do I feel like Danny Strong was like, listen, Jonathan would totally think this is hot.
Maybe you're just experiencing a self-evident truth. Self-evidentializing.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So over at the Sunnydale docks, last time we were here, I think Faith was fighting Trick. We don't get much of the Sunnydale docks, but here they are.
Yet another character we didn't necessarily need, but are happy to see the Sunnydale docks.
Basically,
Giles is like, well, they're no longer used for commercial fishing. Sir, don't you live in England?
But Clem, I mean, like, Clem doing the service of the listener here, too, just being like, what does it feel like to know shit like this, you fucking weirdo? I will say that I love the Clem and Giles pairing, and so I would like to call for a tiny little sound clip to support my love of these two. Let's hear them. Basically, we should set up the fact that last episode, everyone was shuttled to the alternate reality, right? And they were not all of them were supposed to go, and the ones that did were supposed to remain together. But Anya's magic was chaotic, and so they've been flung across Sunnydale, probably, which is why it made the Sunnydale docks necessary, because they needed multiple locations. Wish we had gotten the espresso pump, just saying. Anyhow, I do love Clem and Giles are together by themselves. Spike was alone by himself. That's why he was talking to Jonathan in the cemetery. And I love this duo. So let us hear them in one of their very first exchanges in the alternate universe.
You and I have different ideas about magic, Roop. You ask me, this is magic. Right here, you and me on an adventure.
Kill me now.
Where's Faith? I know that has nothing to do with anything except for that. We're talking about the Sunnydale docks. But, like, what? Where's Faith? What's she doing? What's she up to? Is alternate reality Faith the same? Like, I just feel like Faith is absolutely identical in any reality. She's, like, consistent.
I would really love to know, but my sense is that no matter how long this goes on for,
we will never know. Yeah, I agree.
They recast her. I don't think that Eliza would come back. Unless. But I don't think.
I don't think that she would either. And I would pray that we do not ever recast. Don't you dare. But maybe we'll get a little bit more told to us, you know, about Faith.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kristen, one thing we didn't mention at the top, this episode didn't have a previously on.
Oh, yeah. I meant to say that, too.
First no previouslys.
And, like, in my mind, and I don't actually think that this is the vibe, but in my mind, I was like, maybe in the alternate reality, maybe any episode that starts in the alternate reality doesn't get a Spike monologue. Like, maybe that's what differentiates. But I just made that up right now. You'd think that I wouldn't have to make it up since I've listened to all the episodes. But Jenny, I have no idea if there's previously on or where any of the rest of them start.
great.
I think also they were probably like, the end of episode 4, they all just got whooshed away. Clearly, they'll just go right to the next episode. And they were right, unless you were me and had to deal with family stuff and took a month to get here. Whew. Anyway.
Yeah. I think this is good. I'm always happy to hear a little wee 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 and Spike being all like, where were we?
Jenny, I have a proposition for you.
Yeah.
If we do, it's long been rumored that perhaps one day we might do Once More with Spoilers, a Buffy podcast where we cover the show once more, but this time we have spoilers. If we should realize this dream someday, I think that we should start every episode with you doing a previously on with a little guitar solo behind it. Okay. You don't have to write a song for every episode this time. You just have to give us the previously on. Okay. You know?
Okay. All right. I'll think about it.
Thank you. back in the cemetery, we get another Guts for Garters. We talked about this in, I think, an X-Files episode. So just in case you missed it, I said I had never heard the phrase. Jenny wasn't paying attention to me, so she sounded like she was agreeing that she had never heard the phrase. Everyone was like, how have Kristen and Jenny never heard the phrase guts for garters? Jenny retroactively said she had definitely heard the phrase. The phrase is back again, and Jonathan says that's such an odd expression and an even worse image. So a lot happening with guts for garters. I just wanted to come clean. I am the, as makes sense, I am the only one who
the
did
only,
not. The only
yeah.
one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one who knows anything. No? Okay.
Right. So close.
So close.
See, and this is why I don't listen to you. that feeling when you sit on your own crypt. Rest in peace, me.
Do you think that you'd be stoked if you sat down on your like gravestone, but it was a fucking mausoleum? Like, do you think you'd be like, oh fuck yeah?
Yeah. And it was like covered in flowers because you were so adored.
Such a rock star vampire that people come from all over to lay flowers at your grave. Spike is more weirded out about this than I felt like he would be. Like, I'm here for it. I like it.
But he's grown.
Yeah, he is. He's
What I really want to know is, fellas, is it gay to identify as Dorothy from Kansas multiple times?
I mean, I think that
is literally the definition.
That is literally the phrasing
sir,
historically used.
Not just a friend of Dorothy.
He is actually Dorothy.
But the friend of a friend of Dorothy.
Yeah.
When I looked back at the beach, I saw one set of footprints, and that is where you Dorothy'd me along.
We're really going off the rails.
Is this good?
Here.
Is this a good podcast?
But maybe maybe the new iteration of Friends of Dorothy is actually just a friend of Spike, you know?
So, listen. Mm.
Oh,
we find out here what seems like, you know, fairly. This is what I was expecting.
Yeah.
That Cordelia killed alternate reality Spike.
Yeah. Which gives some reason and some heft to why Drusilla is so focused on killing Cordelia, even though there's this whole sunlight spell thing happening.
And why Cordelia, one of the reasons why it's really easy for Cordelia to view Spike as expendable.
Totally. He's already gone. Already gone once. Might as well go again.
Yeah. So Jonathan is going to try to locate Cordelia and Indira on the spirit plane for Spike in exchange for Spike asking Anya very nicely to remove the curse on Jonathan that holds him haunting the cemetery for all time, right?
What did Jonathan do to Anya? Please tell me.
Here are some things.
Okay.
Here are some theories.
Great.
A number one, I don't know if you've heard, but Anya and Taro were best friends.
just best friends. Nothing more.
Yeah. So did Jonathan kill Willow?
Oh my God. Starting Willow big, there. Swinging hard.
Yeah. I have some other ideas, but this is number one. Willow and Taro were dating in the alternate reality, and Jonathan killed Willow.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. Put it on the board.
Okay. Anya had a dog before Jasper who met an untimely death at the hands of Jonathan.
Oh my God. Jonathan was actually Anya's dog walker, and through a mere accident, Jonathan didn't even mean to do it, actually.
Jonathan shoplifted from the magic box.
That tracks across many, many planes, actually. He needs
the thing is, though, that how did Jonathan die? Did Anya kill Jonathan and then curse his ghost?
Or Jonathan die and then Anya was like, hey, you're banished?
Yeah. Can't wait to find out.
I'm flying away, by the way, is the line absolutely not in the script that I fully knew was
flying away.
We have commented for some other episodes that we don't need to be told everything. This is a place where I disagree with us. We absolutely needed this exposition.
We needed to know.
Jonathan. Okay, to the magic box. Anya by herself, no Jasper. Oh no.
Everything in the magic box is busted up. She assumes by Drusilla. She mentions the world of shrimp. Drink.
Yeah, that's on your bingo card. It fucking better be.
Mm-hmm.
And then before we get too much further in the magic box, we cut over to Drusilla's lair. Jenny, really importantly, I thought that you would be in solidarity with Juliet Landau because the script actually calls for Drusilla to say, oh, poo, what is it this time? And she decidedly does not say that.
What does she say?
I think she just says, oh, you know what I mean? Like, she just takes poo Good. Out of the equation. She was like, Drusilla would never.
Correct.
Oh, so I have something for this. And this is probably, I mean, you probably could gather this just with your own brains. But when I saw the list of, when I heard this, actually, the first time, and I heard the list of names that Taro was calling on in this opening, she's doing the sunlight spell, working on the sunlight spell. I was like, these clearly have to be actual names. And they are. So she says, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing anything wrong. She says Capri, Malak Bel, Surya, and Shamash. Capri was an Egyptian god who represented the sun. Also, this god, I just have to say, Jenny, is a scarab-faced god. Its face is a scarab beetle.
Ooh.
Malak Bel is a Syrian sun god. Also, something I found very interesting about Malak Bel is that it was actually part of a trinity with Aglabol, which is the moon god, and Baal-Shemin, which was the sky god. I just thought it was a really cool trinity since I'm so used to, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Really liked sun, moon, and sky as my trinity.
I'm also with you.
Surya is a Hindu god of the sun. And then Shamash is from the Mesopotamian religion, and that's the name of their sun god. So these are all rooted in, you know, real religious, cultural places, which I thought was fun.
Cool. So this is where we learn.
Yeah, take us through. Take us on a journey.
Okay. Vampires burn in the sun because the demons inside them burn.
Right.
Vampires are like, prepare yourself, hermit crabs? Draining a human invites an ephemeral vampire into the dead body.
Give me a side-by-side of Lestat and a hermit crab. Like, just I just want them next to each other, just for fun. Okay?
Okay. There's a meme going around right now of Lestat. Tom Cruise like necking with Brad Pitt, and the caption is like, what kind of interview is this?
Yes, I've seen it.
Hell yeah.
we should do a side coverage at some point one day of the television show Interview with a Vampire. Have you watched it yet? You've watched it?
I have not. I haven't.
Oh god. So, you've had a child and I don't even recognize you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know.
All right, well, good. Don't watch it.
I'm saving myself for our coverage. Perfect. Our inevitable, glorious coverage. Okay, so this sort of spin on the lore.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Tara concludes that the solution isn't about changing vampire physiology entirely, but to change the skin to make the skin become armor against the sun to protect the demon inside and trick the sun into thinking you're not a vampire at all.
Right.
This is interesting.
Yeah, I am interested. Speaking of memes, I am the math meme, you know? Like, this is advanced level shit. Call Hermione, but this is above my, I am the Ron in this situation. I don't know. I don't know, man.
Not me. Not Hermione. Yeah. Really.
Oh god.
Really meme heavy episode.
Yeah. Just 2 42-year-olds making a podcast.
Yeah, we're very cool and hip. Inevitable. Our fingers are pressed lightly upon the pulse of the youth. This feels unnecessarily complicated. I don't want to feel like I'm doing mathematics.
Right. But also, like, it is interesting. And so, like, yes. I'm here for it. It's interesting and it's complicated. And this is one of those places where, again, really easy to be the listener and to have feedback, right? But it is one of the places where I'm like, you know how sometimes you get a book like, I read Nona the Ninth and Harrow the Ninth and Gideon the Ninth. Everyone is so mad at me because I said them all out of order. But, you know, those books are really complicated books about, like, necromancy. There's 9 worlds. There's a lot to go on. And so you have, like, the thing at the front of the book where you can, like, go back and be like, wait, what are these kinds of necromancers? What does this house represent? And so, like, this can't exist in audio form, really. But, like, I just wonder, when it comes to lore that is this specific and this complicated and this heavy, there has to be a way to help us, the listener, digest it and understand it and use it to then listen to the story itself without it having... without the story having to carry the weight of teaching us this stuff. It just feels like an impossible lift to do seamlessly.
I mean, you think about, like, the base, the show is, like, built upon lore that we are largely already aware of. This has already been absorbed into our consciousness just by virtue of being alive. Mm-hmm. Vampires are a part of the collective consciousness, and, like, certain aspects of the lore are just, like, readily available in our brains.
Right.
Part of me wonders, like, is there a way for this, like, specific, like, the lore expansion of this specific thing to have been, like, parceled out over a number of episodes. Mm-hmm. Would it be easier if we were watching an episode of television to absorb this? I'm like thinking about like made up lore that gets introduced in the series, and it's usually episode specific.
Yep.
One demon that has a particular goal, and it's usually fairly simple. It's like they want to destroy the world,
and you need to just punch the jewel in between their eyes.
Yes, exactly. but this is like you know, it's really interesting, and changes the way that we think, right, about mm-hmm. this very familiar idea. But it's hard to absorb this much new information about something that, like, you know, you're already familiar with, and like apply it while also experiencing the story and like ingesting that.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Totally. Made sense to me.
But I really like all of this, like, you know, make the skin become armor to protect the demon inside. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we change the way that the sun interacts with a vampire? Like, that's all very interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get to the next piece of this with Bang and the minions, we also see that Drusilla learns a little bit more about Kurgan, that Kurgan wanted to be the god of the vampires. Drusilla's like, LOL, that's not real. That's fake. Okay, so the minions volunteer as tribute. Tara says she's not ready to do this spell yet, but the minions are like, hey, we say we serve Drusilla, and Drusilla is really impatient, so why don't you at least try it out on us? We're here to lay down our lives, et cetera, et cetera. And Tara takes a stab at this, and at first they feel great. And I honestly, like, had a little pang of like, oh, buddy, when one of the minions is like, the warmth on my skin, I'd almost forgotten what this felt like. Like, it's like you never really think about that, because that is quite a very specific feeling, and it's very nice, and they never get to feel that. That's sad.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they all set on fire.
Do you think vampires can use
go
a tanning?
Tanning?
Surely Angel goes tanning.
I was going to say, there isn't a world in which Angel didn't have those tiny little fucking goggles over his fucking eyes with his spiky hair in a fucking tanning bed. Like, we've seen, like, 70s Angel, but, like, show me 80s Angel who went tanning and, like, greased his body up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The minions set on fire. The spell doesn't work. The sunlight has somehow, it is inside of them. But then also Tara, like, slows that so that they don't burn right away. There's just so much happening.
There's a lot happening. And that's not all, Kristen.
That isn't all. You know that feeling when, actually, I'm just going to play the sound clip, okay? Because Kurgan is inside of Tara, and I would like to, I know, I listen, phrasing, but The show will carry that torch for us. Let's hear mm-hmm. Drusilla and Tara / Drusilla and Kurgan in this scene.
Hello in there. Who are you? Why are you hiding inside my Tara?
She knows who I am.
Tara, how could you? You have a man hiding inside you, and you didn't tell me.
That feeling when...
Yeah, this,
you know, but don't cheat on your partners. Be honest with your partners. Be open about what you'd like to be doing. And if you have the soul,
a man hiding inside
you, if you have a man hiding inside of you, you know, that you probably should have a discussion about that. You know, according to Drusilla. okay, so this is a plot twist. The soul, Kurgan actually, like, because the vibe was like Kurgan wanted to be immortal, but then he wasn't successful in that, right? And so he, like, put his soul into the grimoire. But then turns out, kind of, you are immortal, actually, if you preserve your soul somewhere, because then your soul can just go inside of the body of the person who opens your grimoire, right?
Kristen, what if I told you that... While you were saying that,
you didn't hear any of it.
Well, in my defense, I received a photo with the following caption. He's eating an entire tomato like an apple. And the photo is of my son.
A boy after my own heart. You know that that's how I used to eat tomatoes as a child. And in high school, I would come home and just pick up a whole tomato.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how I feel about your son, but he just fucking went up a few notches for me.
So you can forgive me for tuning you out.
Honestly, Aldrich eating a tomato like an apple is greater than Kurgan inside of the body of Tara. I agree with you.
Should we change what the podcast is about?
Special new segment.
Detailed descriptions of photos of my son.
Yeah, yeah. It's a new segment called What's He Doing?
He's eating an entire tomato like an apple. I love him.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hey, Jenny.
You know how we're always obtaining new lotions and creams for our faces?
You know, I really do. We talk about skincare more than anyone probably has a right to know.
It's true. If you, like us, are tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then let us tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
And here's the deal. The reason that OneSkin is very different from anything else is because they use a proprietary OS1 peptide. If there was time, I would play the medical doctor jingle for myself just for saying that. It's the first ingredient that is proven to actually switch off the aging cells that cause the lines and the wrinkles and the thinning skin. And they have a bunch of studies to back this up. We've both received their products and just started using them, and they are awesome. I also love the fact that they come with refillable inserts. So you sort of get your plastic container one time, and then if you like the product and you keep going, they just send you the little packet that goes inside. So if you want to learn more about them, you should check them out at oneskin.co. They are the world's first skin longevity company. They focus on cellular aspects of aging and keep your skin looking and acting healthier for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code BUFFERING at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code BUFFERING. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Okay, so what's going on? Andre Kurgan possessing people, his soul. He put his soul into the grimoire. It's, and I quote, the only thing that makes sense. Okay, first of all, bold of you to say that makes sense.
Also, at this point, the grimoire definitely has an eyeball that blinks on the cover, right? Like, this is...
Yeah, they're like, oh, book.
I mean... okay, and then... There's more here. And this, I would consider myself fairly knowledgeable in the universe of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But Tara does the spell. It drains her. We learn that Kurgan is also hanging out in there. And then she's so drained that she needs a witch. And the witch that is brought up is Althania. And in the audio, you're definitely told that, you know, we know Althania, because good Tara is like, no, not you. And I was like, who is this? I had to look it up. Did you know who Althania was?
Let me guess.
Oh, yeah. And my guess, I think, was actually right. So guess.
Okay, so during Willow's rehabilitation, she went to England, and subsequently, even after coming back to the United States, I think received support from a coven that I believe was based in Devon. So was this the head witch in charge?
Ding, ding, ding. HWIC, okay. Althania. That is exactly
tremendous.
Who this is. I have referred to her as Chekhov's Althania.
okay.
I mean, I'm sorry, but when a witch is drained, and specifically you hear someone say, don't actually finish her off, save her for leftovers for later, I feel like it just makes her automatically Chekhov's Althania. So,
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
Yes. So Tara can have leftovers.
Leftovers, because Althania is so powerful, no need to devour her all at once.
Hoo boy. Yeah, Tara has a slurp. And then. Okay. I just feel like a busker is busking.
Buskily?
Buskily. Busking buskily across the room. Yeah, this is obviously, the song is obviously intended to be a joke, but it also just like bums me out for country music that this is what a lot of people think about country music, but also country music has done this to itself. It is reaping what it has sown. It's just so complicated. You know, the other day, Kristen, I was like, I was looking after Aldrich by myself, and I was like, I'm going to play Aldrich's some Johnny Cash. He's going to hear his first Johnny Cash. And so I put on one of my go-to Johnny Cash albums, Live at Folsom Prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it opens with Folsom Prison, which of course includes the lyric, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And I was like, oh God, okay. let's, don't pay attention. It's a made up.
It's ketchup. Pretend. It's actually ketchup.
Yeah, it's ketchup. So I hit skip to the next track, which is, of course, Cocaine Blues, in which there is yet another lyric that is something like, I took a shot of cocaine and I shot my woman down. And I was like, Aldrich, no, it's ketchup and sugar. It's sugar and ketchup. Pay no mind. And then I just went through, and then I switched over to Live at San Quentin. And, you know, there's just a lot of shooting people and doing cocaine, it turns out. And that, to me, is really the essence of country music.
Oh, my God.
Not your wife and your dog leaving you.
Yeah. That's fair. A good case.
Oh, if they do leave you, it's because you shot them and did some cocaine.
Oh, God. I just now have a vision of, like, Aldrich listening to Johnny Cash while eating a tomato. Like, just fucking chomping listening, you know?
Yeah. Well,
yes, the busker busks buskily, and this is a busker vampire. Their names in the script are busker vampire and worried vampire. And so the worried vampire is like, yo, did you hear? The Slayer's back. We got to go. And they rush off, which clears the stage of the streets of Sunnydale.
Now, the worried vampire is like, wow, you've got a great hustle going on. But let me tell you what I would do if I wouldn't be getting anywhere near
this
somebody
busker.
Singing the song. Yeah. I'd be crossing the street myself.
Okay, so this is when we get the Cordelia Indira conversation. So Cordy and Indira stayed together in this whatever we call it, zooping to the other reality. And Cordelia is, you know, she's not telling us a lot about her life herself, right? That's her vibe. She doesn't want to talk to you. She's not your friend. She just has business to do. She's lost a lot, etc. So we learn a few things. Cordelia came to Sunnydale when she was 12. So she did come to Sunnydale earlier than Buffy in Buffy's universe. We also learn that Cordelia's sister died. We knew that. But Cordelia blames herself. When Indira asks her for any details, Cordelia is like, shut up. We don't talk about that here.
But then she does.
But then she does. And Indira says, I'm here. I traveled across realities to help you. I'm fighting alongside you. I think I deserve to know why. And Cordelia says they're not friends. And Indira, I just, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but Leia's ability to deliver lines with very distinct. We talked to Casey. If you listen to our interview with Casey, you know that he was talking about how, like, to do Jasper, they needed, like, all these specific kinds of sounds to mean different things from Jasper. Leia's range of telling us how Indira is feeling with a short, little amount of words is unbelievable. I mean, she is so incredibly talented at translating emotion through audio and audio alone. It knocks my socks off every episode. Indira basically says to Cordelia that, like, in her reality, there was a Scooby gang and, you know, people did rely on each other and people did share each other's feelings. And so whatever this unlocks for Cordelia, it does get her to open up. And we learn that the master sired Cordelia's sister, turned Cordelia's sister into a vampire, and then starved her of any nourishment, any blood, until she became like an animal, like nearly rabid, what have you. Then locked Cordelia and vampire Sarah in a room together. And of course, Cordelia had to kill her own sister. This is there's a bit of gun in this story, right? This is Gunn's arc with his sister from Angel. His sister was turned into a vampire. He was a vampire hunter, and he had to kill his own sister. I also got some notes of the end of season 2 of Buffy when Buffy kills Angelus, but it's Angel when she kills him, because we hear Cordelia say that, like, it was like her sister was a vampire, but in the last moments, like right before she was fully dust, her sister, like, mm-hmm. recognized what was happening and looked at her and was devastated. So I like that. I like that there's some little pieces from other places here in this story. But
yeah, some echoes of Helpless as well.
Helpless, yes, being trapped in the room. Yeah.
This is very sad. Oh, yeah, you know what? I had written down, do, do, do.
Yeah, there it is.
Do, 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 do. And Cordelia says the master killed us both that night.
Oof. Yeah, some really good writing in this bit. And I also think, you know, Charisma has a very incredible ability to give us a lot. I mean, these monologues are pretty long, and I was rapt for all of them, paying attention to every detail of the story. Lines that I highlighted were, you don't know what it's like to choke down your grief just to keep functioning. And then, I never asked for it. Yeah, I may be good at it, but all that means is I'm good at two things, killing and not dying. That's,
I know,
powerful and hard.
Yeah. I'd like, she's crushing.
Yeah. I'd like to play a little sound clip here of just a quick exchange between Cordelia and Indira in this scene, just so we can hear a little bit of what Charisma is doing. And also, I think what Leia is doing, even though Leia only has 1, 2, 3, 4 words in this clip.
Every loss I've experienced, Sarah, Harmony, my Giles, Jesse, it's like a dull ache that never goes away.
Cordelia, if I'd known.
You'd what? Not ask me thoughtless questions? Seriously, you don't even know me. So don't try and understand me.
Are we to understand that Jesse was the boy she liked?
I was hoping that you would pick up on that, Jenny. Yes, I do believe that Jesse was the boy she liked.
You're hoping I would pick up on that. Please.
Yeah. Also, did we already know that Harmony was dead in this universe?
I think only insofar as they, you know, we already got a list of people close to her that were killed, and right. one of them was her best friend.
Okay.
And one of them was the boy she liked.
Okay,
so,
okay, okay.
Harmony, Jesse.
You hate to see it. Harmony living longer than nearly everyone in the Buffyverse in the reality we know, but she didn't she did not last here. But yeah, this is just I think it's really beautiful, and I think it's also really important and good backstory for Cordelia the Slayer.
Yeah, I love it. And I love charisma. Just so great.
Yeah.
And now, yet another individual who said yes to the big reunion. It's the Sunnydale Zoo.
And the hyenas who have somehow, like, the werewolves fed on the hyenas vibes. Is that what makes a were-hyena?
No, Kristen, that is not how it works.
But if a werewolf bites a human, then the human becomes a werewolf who's human most of the time. So if a werewolf bites a hyena, the pack. John Mark, right. John Mark, play The Pack by Kristen Russo.
No, thanks. Clem is allergic to hippopotami.
I looked up. Okay, so not to be, I promise I will limit myself to how many script things I talk about, but like, when I heard hippopotami from Giles, and I was, because I listen and read at the same time, and in the script it says hippopotamuses, and I was like, oh my God, did Tony Head say, sorry, but Giles would only say the correct plural of hippopotamuses. The correct plural is hippopotamuses. So I love that actually Tony Head was like, I feel like Giles would say hippopotami simply to get to say hippopotami.
Maybe it's the British plural.
British folks, will you please email us at hello@bufferingcast to let us know what you say for the plural of hippopotami. Clem is calling Giles Roop. We love to see it. Giles hates it.
Clem is open to having a second best friend after Spike. That slot is currently open. Giles, if you'd like to apply. I'm sorry, I mean Roop.
Roop. Okay, so Clem, in addition to his ears being large and making wonderful flapping noises, the largeness of his ears also allow him to hear better, all the better to hear you with, says Clem. And he can hear the jingling of a small bell following them, sniffing and some puppy peeing noises. And of course, this is Jasper. How exciting. But is it Jasper? Are we going to hit you in another sound clip right now? Yeah, we are, because Emma Caulfield deserves it.
Any sign of Anya?
The way this little guy's freaking out, I don't think he's seen her.
No, I haven't seen her. But we're going to find her together.
Oh my God. Did the dog just talk? And did it sound weirdly like Anyanka?
Impossible.
I think it's adorable.
Call me adorable again and I will rip out your throat with my... Ugh, this is so humiliating.
Just threatening everyone's life while simultaneously demanding assistance and subservience.
Oh, this is very, very fun. I sort of persuaded, I helped shoehorn Emma Caulfield into doing a Pupyanka impression live on stage at Comic-Con for us. And I didn't know if it was going to work. And it took a little bit of back and forth, but she got there and she did that live for us. And it was very, very wonderful.
Yes.
She had to put on Anya first and then was able to get to Anyanka first and then to Pupyanka. Like, it was like a layered journey for her as an actor, which I thought was very fun. It makes sense. We also learn that Anyanka doesn't want to kill Anya, right? Because there's this, like, we'll help you if you promise not to kill Anya moment. And she's like, why would I ever want to kill her? I obviously just want to smooch her until I fall into her body.
Yes, queer culture. And then, animals descend upon them.
Don't worry if you're wondering how Anyanka got into the body of Jasper. It's simply quantum paradox, you guys. It's just the simplest explanation. Yeah. Two Anyas kind of in a orbit to another reality simply can't exist. So zwoop into a puppy body.
Zwoop.
Zwoop. All right. Into the magic box we go. The minions are here to set themselves on fire as a means to torching the magic box. It seems like they could have just used some gasoline in a match, but
right.
We like the drama.
They like the drama.
They do like the drama.
You know who else likes the drama?
Tara.
Tara. Tara. No, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. Tells Anya, you know, you should just like go back to whatever reality you scooted off to and just like never return.
Mm-hmm. You'll be safer that way. And Anya's like, how about not? How about I don't do that? And Tara, for whatever reason, tells Anya that there's a book that she's after. So somewhere in this episode, we also learned that there's a book that Giles had that mentioned Kurgan. And maybe there's more that Tara can, you know, learn to help her with the sunlight math. And Tara tells Anya that Giles had this book. And so Anya, of course, is like, you will get that book over my dead body. To which Tara's like, well, that's unfortunate. I didn't want it to have to be that way. And then we just hear like this very forceful wind and a scream. And we cut to the next scene.
We do. Okay.
Cordelia. I would have put Ghost Jonathan in the universe simply to get him to say Cordelia in a spooky ghost voice, honestly. Is there any word better to say as a ghost than Cordelia?
No, I think that's the number one. The best job you can get, the best assignment you can get as a ghost is haunting someone named Cordelia.
Or Ophelia. You know, just give your ghost someone with a lot of vowels in their name to haunt.
Cordelia's like, he's a ghost. He's also a dweeb. Jonathan wants to know if he can trust Spike. There's this really great harpsichord and theremin cue. Well, meanwhile, over in the cemetery, Spike is like,
you're scared, ashamed of what you feel, and you can't help it. You know you couldn't deal. Whispering.
There he is. Spike!
Okay. Listen. Listen, I sometimes.
Inspired.
Yeah, and like, this is a back massage for fans. This is a ice cream cone for fans. This is simply exists only to delight us. And I feel like, Jenny, for me as a person who likes the show, clearly loves the show, but also who like has interacted with so many people who love the show, I get this like double burst of excitement in moments like this where I'm like excited for myself, but then I'm so excited for them to be excited for the listeners to be excited, you know. This did that for me. Spike knows that Cordelia killed this reality Spike at this point, and he's holding that also close to the chest and just simply calling her a hypocrite for no reason and like making side comments. And she's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But he's not telling her that he knows that she killed her Spike.
Jonathan pieces out. Beware of Jonathan! And Indira's like, hey, since this reality Spike is dead, and that must have driven Drew absolutely bonkers, what if we, quote, resurrected Spike? And Spike says, smashing.
Mm-hmm. Spike, because Cordelia's play is like just simply with the force of Spike and Indira, like they will be able to do this thing. But like, you know, it's a way more fun plan for them to like pretend that Spike is back in this reality. So yeah, let's get Cordy on board. Let's all get to do a little play.
Okay. Run and catch. Run and catch. The lamb is caught in the blackberry patch. Drusilla is giving major salad fingers here.
She's like, can't believe
Hubert Cumberdale, Marjorie Stewart Baxter, and Jeremy Fisher.
It's amazing to me that salad fingers must be like moving back into public consciousness, because I just rewatched Salad Fingers literally 2 days ago.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because do you remember that that drinking out of cups being a bitch video that we watched a bunch of times?
Of course.
Yeah. So that came into my feed, and that made me remember, oh yeah, there was this, and then there was Charlie, we're going to Candy Mountain. So I went there, and then from there I was like, oh my God, Hubert Cumberdale. So in case that I'm hoping that there are other people in our age bracket who are simply so proud of me for knowing exactly what my holy trinity is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, congrats.
Anyway, yes, I agree. I also think that Drusilla should get her jingle for this, for a few things. I'm going to tell you why. A, for what you just did, for that performance from Drew. B, for her line, yes, I know you're only a doll. Do you think I'm demented? And three, for then later learning that Drusilla sometimes turns her minions into dolls, question
mark?
Drusilla, you fill my heart with dread, and still I'm led right back to you.
Ooh, Jenny. Okay, so whatever. There's this minion, and he tastes like cinnamon, and Drusilla kills him. I would just really need to, I have to, before the episode is over, tell you that I want us to only ever call that minion Cinnaminion.
I celebrate this.
Great.
It's the only reasonable course of action.
Thank you.
Okay, so back at the zoo. Anyanka Puppy is giving away their location with her yipping. There are these hyena-human hybrids. Where hyenas not? Wolf hyena hybrids, Kristen. But rather, human hyena hybrids.
Wait, what? That's what they are? They're human hyena hybrids? I thought they were hyena werewolf hybrids.
No.
Oh, they're were-hyenas because they are humans until they turn into hyenas?
There we go.
Oh, I thought they were hyenas until the moon was full, and then they were werewolves.
No. So close.
Damn it.
Why would they leave the lion's den unlocked?
I don't know. It's fucking Sunnydale, you know what I mean? Like, why anything? It's Sunnydale. It's the place of chaos.
So, Giles and Clem trapped. Anyanka Puppy is small enough to fit through the bars. She bites Clem and scampers away.
Farewell, Clement! It's just, listen, it's good to me, okay? I like it.
Yeah. My favorite audio of the episode is the mournful jingle jangle of Anyanka Puppy's collar as she scampers away at the very end of the episode.
Oh, cute. My favorite audio is Clem's sneeze when he meets a hippopotamus. It's so good. It's like a backward sneeze. It's like the phlegm comes first and the air comes after. I just really appreciate the sound design. It's gross, but it's effective.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we've looked over hill and under Dale and around the zoo and hither and thither all over the cemetery. There's nowhere left for us to look, Kristen, but directly into the all-seeing eye of the Sexual Tension Awards.
I like how you're somehow melding my segment from The X-Files, Kristen's Crystal Ball, with your segment, the Sexual Tension Awards. You just made your Sexual Tension Awards also all-seeing.
Well,
fascinating.
X-ray vision, baby.
Sex-ray vision.
Yeah, nothing is safe. No act is safe. And none can be hidden from the all-seeing eye of the Sexual Tension Awards. Come on.
That's creepy.
The Kristen's Crystal Ball sees into the future. The Sexual Tension Awards sees into the bedroom.
That's so creepy, Jenny. Take it back. Dial it back.
All right. I recant.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Beautiful friends. Today's episode, you know, there's a lot of, like, people trapped inside of dogs. There's a lot of, like, were-hyenas and hippopotami. There's not a lot of time for sexual tension.
Mm-hmm.
There's lore being expanded. There's character histories and character traumas being told to us. No time for romance, except in one very special place.
Yeah, sorry. And this isn't going in as a contender, but Jenny, I did just remember that this is the episode where Drusilla says that what Tara does with her fingers.
Listen,
is, I know, it's...
Meep!
Yep. None of Jenny's business, that's for sure.
It's none of my business personally, but if it's your business, then I celebrate that for you. This episode, we are nominating... We have collectively decided, mm-hmm. So I guess it's none of Kristen's business either.
Yeah.
To nominate Ghost Jonathan and Spike in the cemetery.
With a pottery wheel.
Wow.
Sorry. Just came to me.
No, that's valid. So if you'd like to cast your vote, that's the only duo we are nominating for this episode. Although you can always write in the comments.
Somebody, listen. Last time we did an episode of The X-Files, I shouted to the heavens and I begged for a GIF that would show Mulder crawling up into the attic and resting his eyes upon Chevy Chase. And Emily McLongstreet gave it to me. I now own that content in my phone. I can watch it whenever I want. What I want from you, not Emily, anyone, it could be anyone, is please a picture of Ghost Jonathan with his hands wrapped around Spike as they make pottery together, please. Thank you.
So cast your vote for Jonathan and Spike by visiting bufferingcast.com/STA. That will take you right to the poll where you can click Jonathan and Spike, or perhaps Spike and Jonathan.
Beautiful.
And thank you for participating. Okay. I guess that's the episode. That's the whole episode.
That's the whole episode. We will.
I can't wait to see what happens next.
Me either. We got four more to go in the series. And I would like to tell you that we also have some really fun little extras coming your way, because we got a couple of interviews set up with a couple of folks who you're going to like to hear from. So stay tuned for that.
Please do. In the meantime, I'm Jenny Owen Youngs, and when I'm not making this podcast with Kristen, I am usually making music. In fact, I have my annual holiday stream coming up on December 14th. That's a magical event called Tidings of Comfort and JOY, at which I play my holiday faves and also songs from my own sad holiday song songbook. You can get tickets and information at JennyOwenYoungs.com. You can also say hello on socials at Jenny Owen Youngs.
Do you still cover Jingle Bells at your tidings?
Every single year. That is the most important song.
Great.
It's a very important, it's a real grassroots campaign to raise awareness about verses 2, 3, and 4 of Jingle Bells.
That's why I asked, because it was you who raised my awareness. So
Yeah.
I'm Kristen Russo, and when I'm not talking about Buffy or Mulder or Scully or, I don't know, Triangle Buddy, I am, I know. Don't you miss Triangle Buddy?
I forgot about Triangle Buddy.
Triangle Buddy, our best friend. I am often doing work with and for LGBTQ communities. You can learn about that on my website, kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. Use that spelling of my first and middle name to find me on social media as well.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BufferingCast. And you can email us at hello@bufferingcast.com.
You can support our work by becoming a patron of ours. We would love it if you did. Patreon.com/bufferingcast, or all of this information, our production schedule, everything you pretty much ever need to know is on our website, bufferingcast.com. You can just click on Patreon over there as well.
This episode was produced by Kristen Russo, Jenny Owen Youngs, and Latoya Ferguson, with support from our consultant, Mackenzie McDade. It was edited by John Mark Nelson. Until and next time. Beware, Jenny Owen Youngs.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.